Hi, it's Eric, the morning after. Before we get going with today's official off-air podcast of the morning after, I want to tell you about my friends at NAMI. I know it kind of sounds like a weird name. It's the, and maybe you've heard me talk about it before, it's the National Alliance on Mental Illness. NAMI Toledo, you can give it a quick Google because I forget if it's namitoledo.org, but NAMI, N-A-M-I, National Alliance on Mental Illness. What is it? Well, you know that I deal with bipolar 2, so my hypomania is actually very productive. It allows me to do this show much better, come up with great ideas to share, but I get the depression and sometimes anxiety pretty badly, but that's under control. I know a lot of people don't have insurance and can't afford perhaps doctor's visits for mental health visits. NAMI can help with this. And oftentimes, NAMI can help not only people who suffer from mental health illnesses and disorders, but more so for the family. If a person has depression or anxiety or OCD or schizophrenia, it's a lot tougher. There's a lot of collateral damage from that one person on the family and friends. And NAMI has support groups for those people and lots of other great free resources. That's why we ask you to support what's going on with NAMI, like the walk coming up on May 12th. We'd love to see you out there at UTMC. You ready? The off-air podcast of The Morning After. Make sure you follow the new Facebook page, Eric D. and the Fam. Let's go. We are not going to start, Jeff, with your music as we normally would. I wanted to have you back because tomorrow is the, unless you're listening today, or yesterday was the Oscars. Congrats to all the winners.
There you go.
Depending on when people listen to this.
Advance congratulations to, Gary Oldman, Frances McDormand, Sam Rockwell, and probably Allison Janney, but we're not sure yet.
And we reserve the right to edit that if you're listening after the Oscars. But Jeff is here because it's Oscars. Ashley is here.
Yellow, because I'm here. I don't know.
Because she doesn't love her husband.
My husband is out of town, and I do love him. I have a babysitter.
And Mike Sheaver is here. Do you like Mike or Michael?
Yeah. All of the above.
All my name.
When your wife is pissed at you, what does she say?
Oh, man.
Oh, man? Okay.
She, okay, oh, man. She might pull out the Michael.
All right, so let me weave this together. I think one of my skills as a radio host is I can somehow sew everything together to make it make sense. If not, I fake it well. Or it's like an umpire.
Make
if
a cohesive picture out of everything you're saying.
If I believe in the call, it's a foul or you're out. So Mike is here because Mike was the latest winner for Toledo Soup. I do some social media with that. And Toledo Soup is a crowdfunding dinner for a micro grant. And there is soup served from area chefs. The Renaissance, I think, provided one of the last rounds when we were at
awesome.
Sophia Quintero Arts and Cultural Center. We ask for submissions of local ideas to improve and better the community. It can be profit or nonprofit. And then everyone pays $5 for the soup and for salad, and you get one vote. And then you vote on one of the four presentations that you like most.
Mm-hmm.
Mike won the last round.
Nice.
Herbaceous Greenhouse,
yay.
Correct?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it is. Herbaceous Greenhouse?
The company is Herbaceous LTD, and I won the funds to be able to put towards a greenhouse.
Okay.
Excellent.
Yeah. How much did you win?
I think it was a little over $1,200.
Jeez. Okay. That's pretty good for especially for Toledo Soup, depending upon the history, because I actually did a lot of research on the history because I did an article about it, which means the next time that I do that Toledo Soup comes up, I'm probably interviewing you about how everything has progressed ever since you won the award.
For sure.
Pay attention, Jeff.
There we go.
So Toledo Soup, the next one will be in May, and I know some of my cohorts, the people have reached out to you, but it's good to connect with you. And how has Herbaceous been, and what do you do?
Oh, man. So Herbaceous is, and this is on paper, I don't know that it's 100% fact, but on paper we're the first and only herb farm in the state of Ohio.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Everyone else is into like heroin and human trafficking.
Yeah, I mean, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, herbs, culinary herbs, and that's it. I started diving into some hot peppers as well and edible flowers, but it all falls under herb, under Herb's.
Diving into hot peppers, I have this vision of you like Scrooge McDuck diving into a big bin of hot peppers, but I guess that's not what you're meaning. You're meaning in more of a figurative sense is what
correct.
You're saying.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, that would not be fun.
Mike, do you have that little unlabeled bottle?
I do.
Can you let Ashley and Jeff get a whiff of that?
I can. This is juiced Scotch bonnet peppers and Carolina Reapers. There's nothing else in there.
Sounds incredibly...
Raider,
wow.
A little over 2 million Scoville units.
That is a powerful... Yeah, that is a powerful aroma. So,
could you explain what you just said?
Yeah, so it's a little over 2 million Scoville units. Put that in perspective. What is it? The jalapeno is 2,000.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're talking about when something like that would be added to food, how much would need to be added to raise it up? What's the level for you know, there is a term for... the amount of spiciness that's in a particular dish. I mean, what would be the term for that kind of thing? So,
I don't know of a specific term offhand.
The oh shit-o-meter?
Yeah, I mean that sounds pretty accurate. Yeah, I mean once you can't taste anymore and it just all it is hurt.
Not quite ghost flames. Pepper level, but holy cow, yeah.
So Mike has these, and would you sell the? Or how does this work?
Yeah, so I sell wholesale directly to a lot of our local restaurants, chefs, bartenders, even a. Been talking with breweries and been talking with Toledo Spirits about doing some fun stuff with their gin. So
Mike's going to be so rich. You're going to be the first millionaire from Toledo. Perspective, first millionaire from Toledo Soup.
There we go.
One more question.
Absolutely.
You told me, tell everyone, Ashley, Jeff, and people listening on the podcast, what you mentioned to me about like oregano that you buy in a store. That story.
Yeah, so oregano, when you, first of all, if you look at the dried oregano that's in the stores, it can be anywhere between 3 to 7 years old. It's stored in warehouses. Like, you ever see those little McCormick tins?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
McCormick has not used tin in over 45 years.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So, the upshot is... what you're buying in stores is not as fresh as you expect. And you told me that the flavor of oregano isn't even what you're putting on your food.
Correct. Yeah, and like even the fresh herbs, you'll see them hanging up in those clamshells in the produce section. A lot of times, those are stored in warehouses even up to a couple years in freezers and then brought out the night before, thawed out, put up. So even your fresh herbs at grocery stores a lot of times are not fresh. Mm-hmm. And I've had chefs that have come up to my table last year at the market in Perrysburg. They tried my oregano and were blown away at how spicy it was.
Yeah, the flavor, the actual...
Yeah.
It tastes like it's supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize how potent some of those herbs are because you're used to the older stuff that's been hanging around in warehouses.
It's amazing how all of our palates have been dulled in a lot of ways by the fact that everything is prepackaged, prepared, and kept on the shelf for a long time, which is understandable because ultimately that's how you make a market out of this kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
But... if you're looking for something that really captures the pure essence of the flavor of it, you're absolutely right in terms of like based upon what I'm all thumbs in the kitchen,
sure.
But I watch a lot of Food Network and so
and really, I like food,
yeah, right. That goes without saying, but ultimately that you're looking at, you know, if it's something is that fresh, it's a completely different experience to your palate than, you know, if something that's been sitting on a shelf for quite a while.
Oh, it's the difference between, and I don't want to name any names. Going to like a chain steakhouse and a real steakhouse.
Yeah,
right.
This tied together better than I thought because, Jeff, you can write something about Mike in Toledo
Soup.
There
we go.
And there's another reason why I wanted to have Mike in for this. Mike has an interesting background. Like, you've done a little bit of everything, but I know that you were just part of something. So, Jeff, movies. Mike, what's one of your past jobs?
Stuntman.
Nice.
In fact, the latest film I took part in was just released at the Boston Sci-Fi Film and won Director's Award, I believe it was.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and got to go to the screening. It was pretty cool. Never seen myself on a big screen before.
We have an idea of like what a stuntman would do. We've all seen the behind-the-scenes video and whatnot, but give us your first-hand perspective of it.
It's a lot of standing around.
That was like my court visit this week. I'm like, this is not Law and Order in 48 minutes.
No.
I've sat for 3 hours.
Yeah.
So what is it like? For people that can't see this right now, Mike looks like a skinny Hugh Jackman Wolverine.
Yes.
So like, if there was like an emaciated Hugh Jackman, you would stand in and like. You be him and fall off of a cliff or something?
Yeah.
I think Eric means that as a compliment.
Yeah.
I do. I take it as that.
I do.
For sure. Yeah, it there's all kinds, believe it or not, there's all kinds of different things that stuntmen do, anywhere from taking a pie in the face because an actress or actor doesn't want to take a pie in the face to just walking down the sidewalk or going for a jog around a corner because, you know, someone might have
Yeah, you're right. It's basically anything that an actor, that there might be an increased level of liability for the insurance, right? And so ultimately they want to make sure that anything that somebody might actually get hurt on, the person that they're paying $1 billion to doesn't get hurt. So they're going to hire, they're going to get the guy who they're paying pennies on the dollar to get hurt.
I remember reading a quote from Charlie Cox, who plays Daredevil in the Netflix series, and he said, you know, I wanted to do as many of the action scenes as the union would allow me to do, which is what you just referenced, Jeff. You ever broken anything? What was the coolest experience? I mean, because pie in the face, we could all, I mean, I would do that.
But. Right. I would pay to have a pie in my face, depending on the pie.
Good point.
But, yeah, I
that's not a euphemism.
Craziest thing they ever asked you to do, one thing your wife might have said, Mike, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, well, I don't think she was there for a lot of the decisions that and the request, but I'm sure she would have cringed at some of them. We did some rooftop gaps in downtown Detroit, you know, jumping from roof to roof.
Did you do any sort of like training for this, or are you just like very agile and you're like, you know what, stuntman today?
I've been around in the parkour scene for a long time. And it was actually some of the originators over in Europe that got a hold of me and said, hey, there's a British film being filmed in Detroit, and we're looking for some parkour group. And, hey, would you and your people be up for doing that? So along with that, and then I had like about 20 years worth of martial arts background too. Hmm. So just kind of seemed...
Fit the bill.
Yeah.
For sure.
Don't be surprised, fam members here, to see Mike more often because so there's martial arts. You are converting to Judaism, right? Yeah. What you should be dead, right?
Yeah, yes, yes.
You've overcome. What was the thing?
So I have what's called Behçet's disease. It's a disorder, an autoimmune disorder, and I was relying on about 90 pills plus an injection a week. Goodness. And yeah, it was literally keeping me alive. I was told that I had about 80% chance of eventual kidney and or liver failure because of the meds I was on. And I'm now no longer on any meds. And
you guys might not have noticed, but Mike's not dead.
It's true.
he's alive. He's here.
I checked, but
yes,
he's here. If he poured the 2 million Scovilles in my crepe, I might kill him.
Right.
Mike has a great background, and I'm glad that we connected. And I love being a part of Toledo Soup. I'm glad you're part of the family, and you can help Josh and Lyle's crepes. I mean, I'm glad they got cool stuff.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Have you broken any bones?
Way
too many. Okay.
But believe it or not, none through stunt work.
He had Bassett syndrome. Of course, I mean,
broken
bone.
But I'm like, my son like loves to jump on stuff, and I'm like, he's totally going to be one of those parkour kids.
Yep.
So I'm like, yeah, prepare myself now for it.
Lindsay, maybe you think like this, Ashley. Lindsay, my girlfriend, maybe. Since I haven't met her son, maybe not. She watches a lot of Reddit, and she's like, all I want is like, I grew up in the generation with Chris Rock saying, you have one job as parent. Keep that girl off the pole. She's like, I just don't want my son on Reddit ghost riding a vehicle at 70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Is that what you think, eh?
No, I mean, my kid's a wild child, so, I mean, he's going to do whatever he wants. So I'm prepared for it. I did things relatively okay, but, like, I loved, like, skateboarding and all that stuff, so I'm totally hoping my kid likes that stuff.
Mike, of any recent movies that have come out, or I don't know how closely you've followed the Oscars and the pictures that are up for Best tomorrow night. None?
Not at all.
Okay, give me a movie that you adore that you're like, man, I wish they would have called me for stunt work on that.
Oh man, honestly, even though I'm not really, it's kind of strange having done stunt work, I'm not really into movies. But
Jeff,
No. I'm looking at it more like I don't think he's going to do well in the game. But there you go.
right.
So. Nor will I. We'll be in the same boat together.
There's a reason Demetrius isn't here.
All of a sudden, Eric's odds of winning have shot up sky high. But anyway, sorry.
No. So honestly, I think it would have been fun. I had a lot of buddies from the Detroit and Toledo area that were in like the Batman movies, like that were even in some of the Star Wars films and
the Transformers.
Like we actually, our set was right next to the Transformers set, so every once in a while there'd be an explosion as we're running across the rooftop. It had nothing to do with what we were doing, but I guess they're like, you know what? Let's keep that. That was in the background. That was sweet.
Added ambiance.
Yeah,
I know they. I wanted to go up, but I didn't. But I know they shot the Transformers like right up in Adrian on some deserted highway. Good. Well, the trailer game, the champion, and Demetrius is not here. Let me.
The reigning champ cannot defend his crown today. So you know we're still considering his winning streak to have extended past 2016 at this point. So
he could have been here. I might not have mentioned. Well, he knew that you were coming.
He saw me. He let me in the door.
You told him he was free to go. You said, chili cook-off or whatever bar. Free to go.
So he saw you, Jeff, so D could have stayed to defend his crown. Instead, Ashley and Mike. Who doesn't like movies, Mike? Come on. Yeah. He does not have time to watch them.
It's
get
more
that.
So like, I guess if I have the time to watch it, it's not the not my go-to.
And at the same time, I've tried to pick movies that most everybody would know, even if you aren't necessarily a movie buff. So I'm not. I don't aim for me. Okay, yeah. I aim for the general audience. So
this will be a quick game, though.
We'll see, because ultimately our subject today is Best Picture losers, because ultimately what we tried to find were well popular movies that were nominated for Best Picture but didn't win.
All right, time out before we go any further. And I know that people might be listening to this after the fact, but I've been told that people don't care when they listen to the podcast if something has already happened. They enjoy it. Ashley, if you have interest in this tomorrow night, like, and Mike, you probably haven't seen any. The Lion King was good. Any predictions for tomorrow night or movies you hope win, Ashley?
I have no clue what's even up in the running.
All right.
Just throw it out
there. I'm going to win big today. Right. Jeff?
My gut reaction is this. We have almost a statistical tie at the top of the Best Picture category right now in terms of like what's going to win, and I love that.
There's analytical sites that break this down, right?
Yeah. And right now, it is considered that either Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri or The Shape of Water are your two potential winners. And I love that. I love that people don't know. And there's also the possibility that the two of those might split the vote and you might get a completely off the wall winner.
Get Out.
Get Out is very, very possible. And so I love the fact that there are all these, you know, that there's a very good chance that people don't know what's going to happen. Like I said, most of the awards, we have a decent idea. The ones I just named earlier in the podcast were pretty much considered the front runners right now. And most of them are considered statistical locks. But Best Picture is as uncertain as I've seen it in a long, long time.
I bet Shape of Water was a great reprieve for me seeing Marvel movies. I really enjoyed it. It was good to look at. I'm big on pacing. I saw half of the nominees and I didn't see the other half. I saw Three Billboards the other night, which is as good as I expected it to be. If you like hearing the C word and the N word, there's a lot of racism in it. And I can't wait from that movie. You saw it, right, Jeff?
No, actually, I have not seen. I've seen exactly one of the nominees this year just because I don't have time. I saw Dunkirk when it came out in the summer, and that is a very good movie. But because of my incredible schedule of having to be everywhere 99 times out of 100, I've actually not seen any of the other nominees, and I feel bad about that. But I'm going to try and catch up.
That
in
makes
the post
me feel season. So much better because I'm like, you're talking movies, and I'm like, I've never even heard
well,
of
I love,
it.
Well, I love movies, but at the same time, real life intervenes 9 times out of 10, unfortunately.
And if they played movies at like 3 in the morning, I could go.
Probably. Yeah, same here. Yeah. Same here. But we don't, thankfully. Yeah. Speaking as somebody who works at a movie theater, I'm thankful for that.
So.
Again, Mike Shevers here from Herbaceous Greenhouse, Herbaceous LTD. Follow Mike on social. Ashley Tresso. And why don't you explain to the soon-to-be, the presumptive losers, how this game works, Jeff?
Yes. Well, the trailer game is pretty simple. There are audio clips loaded up from trailers, from movie trailers. Now, I've tried to remove any specific hints as to what the movie was, as in if they say the title in the thing, I probably took it out at some point. But listen to the trailer. If you know what the movie is, slap your hand on the table. That's as close to a buzzer as we have. And then I will call your name and you guess what the trailer is. If you get it right, you get a point. That's as simple as it gets.
Awesome.
The need for the headphones today, guys.
Yes, sounds good. You're going to have to be able to hear these. So, all right. We're going to start all the way back as early as we get in this game from 1981 with this nominee.
For nearly 3,000
I don't know.
Years.
Shoot.
The lost
I know what it is now.
The Bible speaks.
Can I say it?
No, you already guessed. Yes.
Is it Moses?
No!
Is that one of them? Is that the guy with the ark?
It said the name.
No, it didn't quite, but.
Realize what the ark is.
It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God.
An army which carries the ark before it.
Say that again. Yeah, there's that part.
It's invincible.
Go ahead.
Noah's Ark.
No!
I got nothing.
That's what I meant.
Now, so we're finding the way that Eric is going to lose this game. If he rings in advance and doesn't know it, then you guys are going to have the opening. That would be Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I heard something about the Ark of 1981. Everyone seemed pretty Catholic
this was the first Indiana Jones movie. It was actually nominated for Best Picture all the way back then.
Actually, let me throw out a Tucker's penis vocabulary word. That was hubris on my part. Sheer arrogance.
What did you think when you? I mean, it was just music when it started, and you rang in.
I heard the music. It's John Williams. I was thinking Star Wars, but 81 is not. It's 77, 80, 83.
And Star Wars was nominated for Best Picture, and it did lose. So you have a decent idea there, but you went for the wrong blockbuster franchise. So, all right. So no points on the board here. As we go to number two on the list from 1989.
I have just created something totally
Field of Dreams.
Classic.
I am impressed, Eric. That would be Field of Dreams from 1989.
Going down.
I just read a baseball player wrote an article for SI Sports Illustrated the other day, and he didn't have it in his top 10 sports or baseball films.
Interesting.
Do you think it's a good movie?
Oh,
a good baseball movie?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a great baseball movie. It basically speaks to what baseball is in the American consciousness more than most other movies.
Apparently, one of his gripes was... Shoeless Joe Jackson in the movie played by Ray Liotta bats with the opposite hand that he actually did.
So he's going for...
the technical.
Never mind that this is a movie where a baseball field is built in a cornfield and ghosts show up, and that's apparently realistic enough, but Shoeless Joe batting with the opposite hand is problematic.
Technical terms?
He did point out something that I do agree with, though. The best part of that movie is the Moonlight Graham storyline.
Yeah, I'll give you that's part of it, but at the same time, there's a lot of really good, wholesome, not wholesome, that's a bad word, but really wholehearted, ideals about what baseball means to people and about what sports can mean to people, that there is, it speaks to something very deep in within all of us about what the connections to everything, including family, which is what that whole ending is all about. So
that's how I feel about when I watch A League of Their Own.
No,
that's a baseball movie.
Absolutely. But that one didn't get nominated for Best Picture. So
did you see Field of Dreams, Ashley?
I did when I was like 7.
Mike, did you
yes,
see?
I did. Believe it or not, that's a movie I've seen.
All right. But Eric up 1 to the rest of the room.
And
is nothing.
We're done. Well, thank Ashley and Mike for coming.
All right, we go to number 3 on the list, please, from 1991.
Walt Disney Pictures presents its all-new 30th full-length animated motion picture.
Beauty and the Beast?
Very well done. Ashley is on the board with Beauty and the Beast from 1991, which was the first animated film ever nominated for Best Picture, and it lost, of all things, to Silence of the Lambs that year. You want to talk about dichotomy between two movies,
right,
but there you go.
That's a toss-up.
Yeah.
It's not like they lost something in the similar genre, right?
Right, but Beauty and the Beast was a very highly regarded film, and let's be honest here, if best animated film existed that year, it certainly would have won. Problem is, there weren't that many animated films back then.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I know that you will, aren't there some very admirable and well-done animated films this year, or shorts, I think?
There are quite a few. The thing about the animated category is that most everybody is expecting Coco will be the go-away favorite, when the rest of the nominees include, say, Boss Baby. But I have not actually seen any of the shorts, but I've heard very good things about all the shorts.
I love the shorts.
And oftentimes, the short subjects are, if anybody can seek them out, you can find a lot of them on YouTube in advance of the awards. They're well worth your time to seek out. Because, first of all, doesn't take but a little bit of investment of your time. It's only a few minutes per film.
Yeah. And some of them are like an emotional roller coaster within 7 minutes.
And they're also made by incredible artists who you never know which one of them will be. I mean, for goodness sakes, Pixar started out making these really short subjects, and now they're juggernauts. So you never know who's going to end up being the next big thing out of those first little tentative steps into the public limelight.
Am I wrong that Kobe Bryant produced one this year?
I don't know. That I have not heard. I'll have to look it up. So, wow.
I know that that's like a weird place. The shorts are where esoteric and outside-the-box names pop in. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just funding for a project, but it's like...
But the funders get the glory. Best Picture, you'll notice the actual award gets given to the producers of the movie, even though they're basically just the people that found the money more often than not.
Right.
All right, so one, Ashley, one, Eric. Sorry, Mike. But we
go
to number four on the list, please, from 1992.
You ever served in an infantry unit, son?
A few good men.
I am impressed, Eric. Well done.
I have seen that movie more than any other Batman movie I've seen. It's the only non-superhero movie. I've seen it 40 times.
But it was nominated in 1992, did not win. That year went to Unforgiven, which was Clint Eastwood's epic at Western. Which I love about that is at the time it was like, well, this is Eastwood's career capper. He's made a great movie, and he's gonna ride off into the sunset.
He's done.
25 years later, he's still making nominated movies.
So. Ashley, have you seen A Few Good Men?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
It's very, very good. I don't know if it was the best movie that year, but it was very, very good. So, Eric, two. Ashley, one. Sorry, Mike. As we go.
Whoever loses has to drink Mike Scovel's.
So we go to 1994 on the list from number five, please.
By the power vested in me by the state of Maine, I hereby order you to serve two life sentences back to back.
Eric?
One for each of your victims.
Not a fugitive. It's not
so be it.
Nope.
Could have just waited. It's not like we're tapping anytime soon.
Send you here for life?
Oh, Christ.
Yep.
That's exactly I haven't even what seen they it. Take.
I believe in two things.
You two don't get that.
Discipline.
Nope.
Really? I'm kind of stunned then. It's only one of the more famous.
Here you receive both.
It was shot here, right?
Yep, it was shot in Ohio.
Shawshank Prison in
1947. Shawshank Redemption. Sorry, I didn't tap.
Oh, well, no. Mike tapped first. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go with.
Which way? There it is. All right, so Mike's on the board.
I only had to hear the title.
Yeah.
But you've both seen it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Yeah, but Shawshank Redemption,
nope.
1994, and that was
nope.
1994 was a huge year in terms of like the big name movies that were nominated for Best Picture. Shawshank Redemption, that was the year that Pulp Fiction came out, and also the movie that won, Forrest Gump, was also that year. So that was a very, very
saw
big
that
year.
One.
maybe 24 years from now, we'll look back on 2017 as a great year for movies because all the nominees are very deserving. Maybe not, you know, Maltese Falcon or Gone with the Wind kind of like legends, but very good movies.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing is that a lot of people I don't think give a lot of these movies credit just in terms of like because Oscar nominee has this tendency that you tend to look at it like it's some type of homework assignment to go watch it. But oftentimes some very good movies get nominated. So, all right. So, Eric, two. Ashley, one. Mike! One! We go to number six on the list, please, from 1995.
Give me a go-no-go for launch.
You know that Easter vacation trip we had planned for Acapulco?
Eric.
Apollo 11.
No, it's not.
What?
Apollo 13.
It's Apollo 13! Thank you! Apollo 11 succeeded. It made it to the moon. Apollo 13 didn't.
Started from the bottom. Now you're here. You're in the lead.
Tied the score at the top of the leaderboard, and Eric suddenly is seeing his certain victory slip away from his grasp. 1995, Apollo 13 was nominated, did not win. It was the front runner, but lost to Braveheart, the Mel Gibson epic. I know.
Can we take that away from him being an anti-Semite?
If there was any way, I'm sure that the Oscars would, but unfortunately they can't. So Eric, two. Mike, two. Ashley, one. So everybody's still pretty much in the running now.
I like it.
As we go to number eight. Is it number seven? Yeah, number seven on the list, please, from 1997.
On the campus of one of America's leading universities.
There is a problem on the main hallway chalkboard. Took my colleagues and I more than 2 years to prove. And I'm hoping that one of you might prove it by the end of the semester.
The most gifted mind to ever enter its classroom.
Good Will Hunting?
This is correct.
We have a three-way tie. Well done, Ashley. That is Good Will Hunting from 1997, which was nominated for...
Yeah.
It's a very good movie. I saw your hand trembling as if you were going to go for it, Mike, but you didn't quite.
I could not
commit.
Place the name.
Yeah. So, but that was Good Will Hunting from 1997, which lost that year because let's be honest, nothing was going to beat the Titanic juggernaut, and Titanic won everything but the acting Oscars it was nominated for, but everything else it got an Oscar for. So Eric, two, Mike, two. Ashley, two. As we go to number eight on the list, please, from 1998.
Dear Mr. Brian Boyd,
No doubt by now you have received full information about the untimely
Eric.
Death of your son.
Saving Private Ryan. There
are Eric's back in the lead. Yeah, that's Saving Private Ryan from 1998. One of the more famous losers of the Best Picture Oscar, because everybody expected it to win. It was going to win. Everybody knew it was going to win. And then it lost to Shakespeare in Love, of all things, in 1998.
Yeah. Did you see it, Ashley?
I was in eighth grade. Yes.
See it, Mike?
Yep.
It is still in this age of, like, gore and horror and... what can we do to shock people viscerally? It is still the most graphic scene in cinema I have ever watched. The Normandy Beach.
It's monumentally unsettling, that opening 20 minutes or so.
Dragging half a body with him.
a soldier stopping to look around and picking up his own severed arm as if he might need it later. I mean, it is just... oh, and that was what they were going for. They were trying to give you the frontline perspective of this was not, you know, what you saw in old school movies. This was horror, basically, personified on that beach. So, Eric, 3. Mike and Ashley, 2 apiece. We go to number 9 on the list, please, from 1999.
You know the accident up there?
Yeah.
Someone got hurt.
They did?
A lady. She broke her neck.
Oh, but you can see?
Eric.
Yes.
Sixth Sense.
That's Sixth Sense, yeah.
I'm like that little creepy girl with the hair. And,
so that was from 1999. That was nominated for Best Picture. It was also, I think, one of the biggest box office draws of its year, but it lost to American Beauty that year, if you remember that movie. So
I do. Kevin Spacey.
Mm-hmm.
Lily Sobieski.
That name's not ringing a bell.
Who's the girl in it?
The girl.
Actually, I think you're right, but I could not remember her name.
I like that. Okay. Say it again.
I don't know that.
No, I think you're right.
Okay, I think you're right. Okay. So Eric, 4, 2 and 2 for both Mike and Ashley as we go to number 10.
Importantly, though, Demetrius, 0.
Yes, indeed. Demetrius listening to this on his iPhone and basically yelling out every answer as it goes by. So as we go to number 10 on the list, this one is from 2010.
With it all. Andy's going to college. Can you believe it?
Toy Story.
Friday. What are you 3? Going to do?
Yes.
I didn't think about it. I'm like, college?
Yeah. I thought I would give it at least that enough of a hint for you at that point. But I hoped somebody would not get the wrong one, because neither of the other two Toy Stories were nominated for Best Picture.
And they were, and I think the other two were better.
Number 2,
I think, was the best.
I love 2. 2 is an awesome movie. But, you know, I think 3 is right up there. I mean, you can't really say that there's a massive drop off in quality from any of them.
Agreed.
So,
Walt Disney World is having their own, like, Toy Story universe now. Mm-hmm.
I heard about that.
Mike, you have a little boy. He's 2?
He is.
Does he watch the Toy Story movies?
He has not yet.
So you don't like movies. Does he watch something over and over again?
Oh, man. There's, like, the show on Netflix. It's Elmo and his aunt and uncle that run a
hotel.
The Furchester Hotel. Yeah.
It's horrible.
He watches that over and over again?
He can, yeah. Fortunately, it's only like a 20-minute episode, so...
Are you into music?
A little bit.
They have a show called Beat Bugs. And
oh,
it's
yes.
All Beatles music.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
It's amazing. It's like, we're watching this.
I'm going to have to do this to my nieces, unless they might be a little older for now, but my nieces have gotten huge into the Beatles thanks to the Rock Band video game.
Okay.
I have that, and they wanted to play it one day, and so we played it, and the next thing I know, they're running around, you know, singing, you know, I Want to Hold Your Hand all over the place.
Yeah. My 18-month-old goes, love, 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 and she just walks around singing. I'm like, yeah.
What does Tucker like to watch repeatedly?
YouTube, kids' YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Awful. Daddy finger, where are you? Over and over again. It is the most god awful.
Five little monkeys jumping on the bed. That's my niece's.
Oh, my God.
We have one left, right?
One left. So Ashley can tie, and Mike can be the spoiler, or Eric can cement his legacy as we go to 2012 for the last one, please.
We here highly resolve.
Lincoln.
That these dead
Eric wins. Yeah, very well done. That is Lincoln from 2012,
which is now on Netflix. Watch
yes, it is. Yeah, just can't. Just
the one
on...
where like they like kill everyone. Wasn't there like an Abraham Lincoln movie where like?
Oh, I think you're thinking of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Oh. which I hate to break it to you, but that was not nominated for Best Picture.
But came out in 2012.
Yes, it did. Same year. Two Lincoln movies came out the same year. But no, Lincoln in 2012, well, the one that was nominated was the one by Steven Spielberg, which was about the actual, you know, historical events around Abraham Lincoln. And Daniel Day-Lewis won an Oscar for Best Actor, becoming like the first performer to win three Best Actor Oscars, which led him to saying that he was retiring and he was never. But he's retired before, and now he's back this year. He's got another movie. He's nominated for Best Actor again. He's not going to win, but he was nominated again. So.
Is that the one where everyone died? Everyone? Well, yes, Civil War.
Yeah.
I meant like there was like blood and guts, and it was like a horror movie.
I forget what the other movie, but there was a movie where there was a customer who was in the theater trying to decide between movies, Lincoln and something else, and he decided against the other one because he said, "I know what happens at the end of the one; he dies." And I'm like, "Do you want to tell her or should I about Lincoln?"
They ratified the amendment. Yes,
and it ends right there. Nothing else happens. They all live happily ever after.
Lincoln does have a jolting ending.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that. Ultimately, they think that Lincoln ended too late. Like, you didn't need to have the coverage of the assassination in the story. That everybody knows what happens there. So why not end it a little bit earlier and have it be, you know, that there was a sense of triumph to it. So.
Kind of like I equated it in a smaller degree to Darkest Hour, where it was hard to watch that and just mentally process it, knowing that 4 months earlier, the outcome of those events happened in Dunkirk with that movie.
Yep. I mean, it was really interesting that two movies covering almost the exact same event from totally different perspectives, and now they're both nominated for Best Picture, when it's one of those events where I don't think, if you ask the average American audience member before this year what happened in the Battle of Dunkirk, none of them would have any idea.
Yeah.
Now they've had a very thorough history lesson about it from two different perspectives, which is kind of cool. So.
I would like now that we've been educated on that, I would like for there to be more movies about what us really awful white people did to Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough.
There's an entire segment of history that is just so underreported there, and we are finally beginning to get out of our own head and let ourselves tell the marginalized stories. But they should be told, in my opinion, by those filmmakers. So we have to find a really good Native American filmmaker who's willing to explore that aspect.
Yeah,
'cause, I mean, here we go, like 3 decades ago, it was considered revolutionary that a movie like Dances with Wolves came out where the Native Americans were the good guys. Never mind that the lead hero was still a white guy who was a white savior who was saving, basically, the Native Americans in that regard. And yet, you know, that was the baby step. It was like, okay, we finally have graduated to the point where they're not automatically savage villains. So now the next step is tell their story. The Trail of Tears is one of the most tragic events in the entire history of America. And it's criminally under-discussed. There should be a movie about that.
I bring this up. I've read a good deal about it. And then I saw Hostiles and how even the people who have some kind of moral soul still call the Indians like savages and treat them like some people treat like black people with guns and like all the other stereotypes that exist. And I think it's like we pat ourselves in the back because it's like, yay, we finally kind of got over slavery and we're kind of seeing. And then it's like we pat ourselves in the back for all the Lincoln stuff and post-Civil War. But then it's like we went off into the West during Reconstruction in the early 20th century and killed all the Indians that were here long before us.
Yeah. I mean, the essential thing is that, you know, we hear all this stuff about anti-immigration and we seem to have completely forgotten that unless you are Native American, we're all immigrants,
right?
And we all have come from somewhere else, and every one of us has blood elsewhere. And so the idea of maybe reintroducing that to people and reminding them, you know what? There are a lot of people who, you know, have a completely different perspective on history than white Anglo-Saxon filmmakers who have dominated Hollywood for the last century, you know, can bring to it. And so bringing that type of perspective to it and bringing new stories from that history forward would be amazing. And I think that it's way overdue.
Did you see Black Panther?
No, I have not seen Black Panther. I can't yet. No passes, remember? If I'm gonna see it, I have to pay, and I have no money to pay yet. Later on this week. The pass embargo ends on Monday. I will have time when I do, and I promise I will see it before the next time I see you.
Can I take Tucker to see it? Is it like too risque? He's 4.
Based upon what I've heard, it's not really that bad.
Long.
Yeah.
That But I'm glad you brought that up. Mike, and everyone, please feel free. This is the fun part about a podcast.
Yes.
So I went with my...
friend that's a female.
That has a
son. That you're dating.
We saw Black Panther, and it was a packed theater last Saturday, the second week out. And towards the end, there was a parent with a crying child. Mm-hmm. And there was grumbling, audible grumbling from the crowd. And this is like towards the last 10, 15 minutes of the movie as it ended. And the parent didn't take the child out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a real asshole move.
I almost wanted to, and I was in the top row, and this person was walking the child in between the rows down in the very front and then the next set of the auditorium. And I wanted to stand up and go, get out!
Mm-hmm.
From a theater perspective and from a parental perspective, can we discuss here? Because I sympathize for the fact that people like you guys, Mike, Ashley, have very little time with very little time and funds for babysitters and to get out and see something that everyone is talking about. So I sympathize for that. But there's a lot of people in that theater. So
mm-hmm, absolutely. And my gut reaction is that if you are in a situation where you're bringing a baby into a movie theater, you have to be prepared for the fact that that kind of thing might happen. And if that is happening, then you have the responsibility to remove the disturbing child from the theater.
Yes.
Now, I would not have advocated standing up and yelling, get out, because that feels like you're kind of adding to the disturbance rather. But feel free to, you know, that's what we're here for as movie theater employees. Come on out to us and say, hey, there's a crying kid in there, and we will happily go in, talk to the parent, and try and get them to remove the child from the theater, you know, in a gentle way. But a forcible way. And ultimately, I think that it's, again, I totally agree with you that I understand the impulse of bringing the child in, but also I also understand that you, as a result, assume the responsibility of, if you're bringing that child in, you are also understanding that child may very well create a disturbance. And if that's the case, it's your responsibility to remove the child until they stop creating the disturbance.
During the conclusion, Mike, as a parent?
Yeah, so for us, like our little guy, Garrett, he has yet to be in a movie theater. Mm. But however, we love going to like concerts at the Peristyle and whatnot. We always make sure to try to sit near an exit,
mm-hmm. right,
and away from everyone. And the moment he starts crying, I don't even care if it's a show for kids, we leave.
Mm.
And we'll go out of the hall, out, you know, wander around the museum if it's like, for instance, if it's at the Peristyle. And once he calms down, maybe we'll attempt to go back in. But if we see it's a no go, then we're out.
He hasn't gone to a movie, right?
He has not yet.
Okay. Ashley?
I mean, I'm pretty hardcore. Like, the minute that you're...
Shut up, Tucker! I would get the belt out!
No, not like that at all. But, I mean, I'm very, very much like, this is what we're doing. You can act this way, or we will leave. I'm not afraid to pay $15 or $50 for a meal and mm-hmm. have to pull myself out. It's my job to make sure, as a parent, that my kid's being respectful. And if that means being quiet, or if that means staying in line, if he can't do that, everyone else that paid deserves that same.
I mean, I think we all understand, you know, at some level that we are in a society, and so we all have to respect each other's
kids
boundaries.
Kids are kids.
Yeah,
and you don't know when they're going to be an
and
asshole.
Kids don't,
like,
yeah, kids don't have that perspective. But a parent that's in there has that perspective.
Right.
And so the parent does have to assume a little bit of the responsibility for, if your kid is causing a problem, then you're going to have to deal with that. It's the same thing, like if the kid crapped in his pants and you had to change their diaper, are you going to sit in there the entire time and just let him stew in the smell and let everybody else around you stew in the smell? No, you're going to take him out and change the diaper.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Although, I will say, as a movie theater employee, I have found loaded diapers in movie theaters. Yeah. So there are some people who don't understand that aspect either and just leave it there. So I don't. It's
like
not
in
surprising.
The theater?
In the theater, under the seat.
Like they changed them on the floor.
No, they didn't change them, I'm assuming. I'm assuming they just left they just took off the diaper and left it on the floor.
Oh, my.
That's an insane type of situation.
Oh, you'd be amazed all the wonderful stuff we find in movie theaters.
Like, you just carried out your kid with its poop butt.
Several, several used condoms in the past. I will
that
add that as well.
Me. I mean,
I have another.
Teenagers need something, right?
I might rather sit in a poopy diaper or on a used condom than what I briefly have an anxiety fear of when I go to theaters, because I've had it before.
Mm.
Bed bugs. I can wipe off a dirty condom, but those bed bugs, if they come home, like, you're done. You got to move. You got to leave the country.
Yeah. Quarantine. Wrap it up. light it on fire,
also,
throw it in the garbage.
When I was at the theater, like all this wild stuff happened last week at the movie theater. The guy sitting next to Lindsay he must have been Kevin Gates. He had two phones, one for the plug-in, one for the. He had lots of phones. One was clearly his drug phone, and it was an old flip phone, and he kept texting with the loud clicky buttons. She's like, "You didn't hear that?" I'm like, "Nope." But I've never actually seen someone who had multiple phones who wasn't like a police officer.
Right.
Or, like, he was not a professional. He wasn't the CEO with a business phone and a family phone.
He was the CEO of something. I mean, something.
He was a
there.
Businessman. He just wasn't a legitimate businessman. Yeah. So.
Jeff, as always, this is a blast. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so very much for having me.
Any final thoughts?
I am really interested in seeing what happens tomorrow night. And I think that, you know, most of the categories are pretty open, but there could be some really cool surprises there. I'm pretty certain that Get Out is going to win at least Best Original Screenplay. If it wins Best Picture, that could be a signal of a major game changer, because ultimately, without the influence of the Harvey Weinstein regime, now that he has been thoroughly deposed from Hollywood, this is the first time that the Oscars are without that type of massive influence over who and what might win. And so if something like Get Out sneaks in and wins Best Picture, that's, I think, a major sea change, and it could really indicate that something cool is happening in the future of the awards. So I'm really interested tomorrow night.
Mike, Herbaceous.
Yes.
What's coming up?
Oh, man. We got a lot going on with collaborating with other local producers and farmers through something that's all throughout Canada. It'll be new to the U.S. It's called Fresh Spoke. You can actually go to freshspoke.com and check out what's going on in Canada. Toledo is going to be the experimental hub, where it's going to start. And so supplying local businesses with local product efficiently. That's most exciting thing coming up.
Awesome.
That's super exciting.
We can look for you at farmers markets?
Not anymore. I was at the Perrysburg Market last year, but you can find me on both Instagram and Facebook at Herbaceous LTD. Herbaceous, HERBACEOUS.
Thank you.
Sometimes Google even wants to correct that, but that is the correct spelling.
Cool. So
I could see how Herbaceous could be spelled a different way to be kind of witty, but...
Sure, sure.
Can I like get some peppers or spices when I'm going to go?
Of course.
Not now. Not the 2 million Scovilles.
Oh, come on.
No. Ashley, remember when you used to have a business?
Yep. Remember when I slept at night? Because that's now.
does what Mike does interest you at all? Because you sold
spices. No, absolutely. No, I love that we did a lot of stuff ourselves, but I was more in like the blending, but it was very hard to find like fresh, like dried cut spices for
Ashley
sure.
Ashley used to own Bumble Olive Oil Company.
Awesome.
He's like, I don't care.
You gotta have good olive oil.
Moving on.
I miss it. And you know what? Ever since she ruined it for me, because I used to buy all my olive oils and vinaigrettes from Ashley.
Awesome.
And I since switched over because I can't get that, or there's some money things. But I would get like Fresh Thyme has the big like 1 liter for like $6.99. She's like, you know, it's like shit quality. And I never really recognized
it. And it's also probably been sitting somewhere for tons of years.
I never would have known the difference. Like, I realized what quality and price and what goes into it. But until Ashley said it, I never realized it.
Yeah.
Thanks for ruining my olive oil and closing your olive oil store.
My words are just very true.
This is fun. Thanks,
absolutely,
guys.
Thank you.
Everybody. This is The Morning After, an exclusive off-air podcast, Q1055.com. Saturday mornings, 8 to 10.